Now Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, had a brother. And her brother's name was Vasudeva. And who's Krishna's father? Vasudeva. So Krishna is the son of Vasudeva, who is the brother of Kunti, who is the mother of the five brothers, the Pandavas. So that makes them cousins. Do you have any cousins?
A lot.
They're in India. But they're children of your father's or your mother's family.
Yeah.
So that makes them cousins, right?
Yeah.
So Krishna and Arjuna and the Pandavas were cousins. Right?
Yeah.
Because Krishna's father and their mother were brother and sister. So Queen Kunti, not only she was the aunt, the father's sister of Krishna, but she was a devotee of Krishna. What does it mean to be a devotee of Krishna? Are you a devotee of Krishna?
Yeah.
Okay. What does it mean to be a devotee of Krishna?
To him.
Huh?
To pray to him.
Pray to him. And do whatever you do for him. You do whatever you do for him. And there are lots of things that we do. We eat, we walk, we sleep, we work, we study, we go to school, ride a bicycle. You know, we do lots of things. And if we can do those things for Krishna, we're devotee. We chant, we pray, we worship, we offer. We're devotees of Krishna, or trying to be at least. But Queen Kunti, she was way up there. She was like a super devotee. Super devotee. Super, super devotee. And Krishna, after he grew up in, where did he grow up? What was the name of the place?
Vrindavan.
Vrindavan. And then when he was 12 years old, he left Vrindavan and he went to the capital city called Mathura. And there he took care of Kamsa. Kamsa, right? Kamsa.
Yeah.
You heard of Kamsa. So Kamsa was finished. Kamsa's father became king again, Ugrasena. So Krishna stayed in Mathura with Ugrasena, the king, and the royal family. And some problems happened. Because when Kamsa was killed, he had two queens, and those two queens were daughters of Jarasandha. So they went back to Jarasandha's place, where they grew up. Daddy! Krishna killed our husband. Oh. Do something. Take revenge. Jarasandha said, I will kill that person who killed your husband. I take a vow. He got a huge army. Really big army. And went charging to Mathura and challenged Krishna to a fight. Krishna came out of the palace single-handedly against the whole army, defeated the whole army, leaving just one person on the battlefield, Jarasandha. He said, Jarasandha, you can go home now. And Jarasandha was completely humiliated. So as he was going home, Jarasandha was thinking, what a humiliation, a powerful Kshatriya warrior, single-handedly defeated by one upstart. I should just give up my life. I've been so humiliated. But when he got back to his palace, his ministers said, no, no, no. It was just one of those things. You weren't ready. He caught you off balance. You're a powerful warrior. Get another army and go get him. Go kill Krishna. You took a vow you're going to kill Krishna. So he said, yeah, I'm a powerful warrior. I'm going to get another army and go kill Krishna. So he got another army, bigger one this time. and went charging to Mathura and Krishna. Same thing, repeat. Krishna defeated the entire army except for one person, Jarasandha. Krishna was thinking, Acharya's comment, this is really a good arrangement, because I appeared in this world to annihilate the demoniac kings, and Jarasandha's kindly bringing them all. I can just annihilate them, just like that. I don't have to even go find them. So I'll just continue destroying the armies and leave Jarasandha, and he'll bring back more armies. My reason for coming into this world will be fulfilled. One of them. So 21 times, Jarasandha was very determined. Very, very determined. That we should be so determined in service to Krishna. He was determined on false ego, and we have the opportunity to be determined in service to Krishna. Right? In service to Krishna. So after the 21st time, he thought, I better have another plan besides getting another army this time. I better figure it out better. So he found out that there was a powerful king in the north country that heard that the only person on the surface of the earth that was a worthy opponent for him in battle was Krishna. What was his name? Anybody know? The king of the Yavanas. What was his name? Kaliyavana. So, Jarasandha sent a text message to Kaliyavana saying, hey, let's get together and challenge Krishna together. And he sent back a reply message saying, that's great. When should we rendezvous? When they got their messages together and brought their two armies to Mathura at the same time. Kaliyavana coming from the north and Jarasandha coming from the east to Mathura. And the military scouts brought the message to Krishna. Now it's not just one army, it's two armies. And they're very huge armies. So Krishna turned to Balaram. You know who's Balaram?
Yeah.
Who's Balaram?
Krishna's brother.
Krishna's brother. Okay. What does he look like? What's his color?
He has a blue dhoti.
He has a blue dhoti.
And he has white skin.
Yeah, or white complexion, because he has a spiritual form, so white. So Krishna said to Balaram, this is very dangerous. The whole Yadu dynasty family is at risk. Who knows what could happen? Of course, he knew what would happen. So he said, you hold off the two armies. I'm going to take the whole Yadu dynasty to our ancestral home in Dwarka. I'll have the architect of the demigods, Vishwakarma, really quick, fix up a city, Dwarka, and I'll transfer. So he transferred the whole Yadu dynasty, settled them in their residential quarters, came back, and was ready to fight. Have you read this in Krishna book? It's exciting, isn't it? So you want to hear what happened next? Krishna went out on the battlefield alone. And Kaliyavana thought, this must be him, because he heard about him. He had never seen him before. Look at his complexion. Look at how he's dressed. That's got to be Krishna. So he went charging at Krishna. You know what Krishna did? He ran. And warriors don't run. They stand and fight. But Krishna ran. And so Kaliyavana started calling him names. You coward! Come back! What kind of kshatriya are you? He was running after Krishna. And Krishna ran just fast enough that he was out of reach.
Kaliyavana tried to run faster, Krishna ran faster, and Krishna ran a long distance. Kaliyavana chased after him a long distance. Krishna kept looking over his shoulder to make sure he was following, because he wanted his devotee, Muchukunda, to have some service to do. So Krishna went into a cave. And Kaliyavana thought, great, now I got him cornered. That's coward. He's finished now. I'm so powerful. And he went into the cave. And he saw somebody asleep in the cave. He thought Krishna got tired, so he laid down to take rest. And he kicked him as far as he could. Get up and fight. And when he kicked him, it wasn't Krishna, it was Muchukunda, who turned and looked at Kaliyavana and cindered him with fire coming out of his eyes like fire torch and pile of ashes. Pretty cool, huh? Because Muchukunda was a king. Krishna was a king. Krishna was in the Moon Dynasty, and Muchukunda was in the Sun Dynasty, same as Ramchandra was in the Sun Dynasty from Ikshvaku. But they were contemporaries. So Muchukunda, like Kaliyavana and like Rukmini, had never seen Krishna, but he heard of Krishna. Muchukunda heard of Krishna through Gargamuni. You know who is Gargamuni? You've heard his name. He was he gave Krishna's name. He was the astrologer of the Yadu dynasty. Really good at astrology. So he did the birth ceremony and name giving ceremony rather of Krishna and Balaram. So when Muchukunda, because he was from a different dynasty, but he was of a royal family, he met Gargamuni, and Gargamuni told him, oh, look at your chart. You're going to meet Krishna. You're so fortunate. He said, really? Who's Krishna? Well, he's the personality of Godhead. Really? What does he look like? And he described what he looks like. And you're going to meet him face to face one day. It says right in your chart. And he described the glories of Krishna. So that's all it took. Muchukunda became a devotee of Krishna. Just like Rukmini became a devotee of Krishna. And he always remembered what he heard from Gargamuni, the glories of Krishna. He was a very, 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 very powerful fighter, a warrior. So powerful that... Come on in. King Indra
Kush.
Do you know who is Indra?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Yes? Who's Indra?
In charge of the rain.
He's in charge of the rain. Very good. Anything else? He's, of all the demigods, he's the king of the demigods. And he's a powerful fighter too. So he was under attack. It's in such a dangerous attack by the demons that he went to Muchukunda and said, help! We need your help! Come and be our general and help us fight this battle against the demons. It was an honor. So he went to the heavenly region, fought for a long time, day and night, and finally, Kartikeya came to relieve him as the chief general. So they gave him a break. Said, you did a really good job, Muchukunda. We're really indebted to you. We'd like to give you a benediction. Whatever you'd like. So he said, what I'd like is to rest. I'm really tired. I'd like to rest a long time. I'd like to rest uninterrupted for a long time. In fact, a second benediction is if anybody wakes me up, they'll die instantly because I see them, fire will come from my eyes and they'll die. Well, I guess we can give you that benediction. And our acharyas say he wanted that because he didn't want the demigods to come and wake him up and say, we need your help again. He really wanted a long rest. But Kaliyavada didn't know that. But Krishna knew that. And Krishna knew that he was his dear devotee, so Krishna wanted to fulfill what Gargamuni had said, oh, one day you're going to see Krishna. So Krishna went into the cave where Muchukunda was resting, and Krishna didn't even have to kill Muchukunda, Kaliyavana. Muchukunda killed Kaliyavana. And then so there's this pile of ashes, and there's Krishna in the cave, and there's King Muchukunda looking around and wondering, who's this other person? He's very attractive, but I don't know who he is. So Muchukunda asked him, who are you? You appear to be effulgent, and maybe you're one of the demigods, and anyway, who are you? You're obviously an exceptional personality. Krishna smiled and told him who he was. I'm the son of Vasudev, the brother of Devaki. Oh, excuse me, the brother of Kunti. The brother of Kunti. And I'm the personality of Godhead. And I descend as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki to appear in this world to annihilate all the demons. You've very kindly helped me annihilate one of them by this benediction given to you by the demigods. And I've come before you because you pleased me very much by your devotion to me. So I wanted to show myself to you. Here I am. Muchukunda was, I didn't recognize you, although I heard description of you and offered some very beautiful prayers to Krishna. Beautiful prayers. Some very beautiful prayers. The details are nice. And Krishna left the cave, went back on the battlefield and started battle with who was the other general?
Jarasandha.
I don't want your daughter to say. Jarasandha, very good. 22nd time, he was like a really determined guy. And what did Krishna do? He ran from the battlefield. He ran. And again, warriors don't run from battlefields. But Krishna ran from the battlefield. So he has, one of Krishna's names, he's honored. He's glorified for running from the battlefield. Something that's against Kshatriya code of honor. He's given a special title, Ranchor. Running from the battlefield. And he ran and ran and ran and ran, and Jarasandha chased him. Oh, you coward, stand and fight. And Krishna ran, and Balaram, and they went up a mountain, and high up a mountain, and Jarasandha thought, now I got him, I'm going to burn the mountain. Set a mountain on fire, Krishna up at the top. So what did Krishna do? He held Balaram's hand, they jumped off the mountain. Ooh. And then they went to Dwarka. So from that time, Krishna and Balaram, instead of living in Mathura, began residing in Dwarka. And Jarasandha thought, now I'm victorious. I've defeated Krishna. Although he didn't happen to mention 21 times he was defeated. I've defeated Krishna. I'm the most powerful person on earth. So while Krishna is living in Dwarka, there's Mathura city where Ugrasena had previously been ruling but had been shifted to Dwarka along with the outer dynasty. And then the capital city, that's the capital of that district of Mathura. But the larger capital of the world was in Hastinapur, and that's where Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and others lived. Duryodhana is the cousin, another cousin of the Pandavas. So, many, many things happened. Many, many things. The whole Mahabharata describes many things that happened. But one of the things that happened was the Battle of Kurukshetra. And during the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Pandavas were victorious. All of the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra were killed, and so many other soldiers were killed, and the end of that was Yudhisthira became the king. Yudhisthira was crowned the king, and time now for Krishna to go back to Dwarka, because Krishna had come to assist the Pandavas in regaining their rightful position as king, particularly Yudhisthira, because Krishna came not only to annihilate the demoniac kings, but Krishna came to establish Dharma. And to establish Dharma, he gave teachings, but he also put a person in charge of the planet who would uphold Dharma, because he's the son of Yamaraj, the Lord of Dharma, as well as the Lord of Death. So it's now time for Krishna to go back to Dwarka. And he did his, you know, saying farewell to everyone, and they were feeling awful that Krishna was going to be leaving, but it seemed impending Krishna was going to leave. And so Kunti, who is the mother of the Pandavas, is paying attention. Kunti, who is the mother of the Pandavas, she didn't want Krishna to leave. She's a devotee. She's not only Krishna's aunt, but she's Krishna's devotee. She's like super devotee. And so as the chariot is seated in the midst of the public square in front of the royal palace, Krishna is about to get on his chariot and leave with Balaram. And Kunti comes weaving her way through the crowd. She's Queen Kunti, so she can go anywhere she likes. And she went right up to the chariot and poured out her heart and pleaded with Krishna, "Please don't go. Please stay." And gave all of her reasons why she wanted Krishna to stay. Some beautiful prayers that she offered, glorifying Krishna and his special position, this position that he has as the creator and the source of everything, the super soul in the heart of everyone, and yet he's kindly come as if he's one of us, although he's not one of us. This is just the action of Yoga Maya in order to churn the hearts and the love of the devotees, and particularly she has appreciation for another one of the mothers, Mother Jasoda, and the kind of love that Mother Jasoda has for Krishna, and so many nice appreciations of Krishna. And then she speaks, when you were present, just by your walking on the earth, everything became auspicious, just by the touch of your feet on the earth. Bountiful everything. Rainfall and jewels and gold and minerals and all necessities of life and grains and everything is present in abundance, and you're going to leave? Please don't leave. Then she speaks about her affection. So that's the verses. All this is background to read two verses from chapter 8 of Canto 1, where Kunti is describing, I'll say the essence, Kunti is describing the affection that she and her sons have for Krishna, and how much pain of separation she's going to feel if Krishna leaves Hastinapur and goes to Dwarka. But she's also understanding that on her father's side and the whole family clan on that side, her parents and all of their relatives, they're off in Dwarka, so they're feeling separation from Krishna. So if he goes to Dwarka, they'll be happy. If you stay here, they're unhappy. If you go there, we're unhappy. And I have affection for both my sons and my other family, my parental family. And I'm torn between these two emotional states. I want you to stay, but they want you to go, and they'll be happy. So I'm torn. So she offered, with that thought, we can come forward a little bit. And those that are hiding around the corner can come around. Thank you very much. Kunti, here's the Sanskrit. Namo kinshana vittaya nivritta guna vrittaye atmaramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha. Translation, my obeisances unto you who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and the master of the monists. And there's a two-page purport in following that, the next verse. Manye tvam kalam ishanam anandi nidhanam vibhu. Samam charantam sarvatra. Oh, this isn't the one I want to read. Bhutanam yan mita kalihi. What happened? Okay. Janmaisharya Sutra Sribir Edimanam Badakpunan Naivayar Hatyami Datum Vai Tvam Akinshana Gocharam. My Lord, Kunti prays to Krishna, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. This is an often quoted verse, these four, the fruits of piety. Janma, high birth, Aishvarya, opulence, Shruta, good education, and Shri, or beauty. People like these things. They wish to enhance these things in this life or by activities in this life to enhance their opportunity for these things in the next life. So pursuing material opulence, whether it's wealth, beauty, knowledge, or good birth, according to Queen Kunti, it has its counterbalance problem, which is one becomes enamored by those things, attached to those things, and as a result, feelingly praying to Krishna is checked. Whereas those that don't have those things can more easily feelingly pray to Krishna. One becomes proud or intoxicated with the possession of opulences and the accumulation of them and trying to be the enjoyer of them. It karmatva kayena sharira bandha. In the language of Rishabdev, one's mind becomes polluted. by affinity for those things, material enjoyment things. So in both of these verses, the word akinchana is used. In verse 26, it's akinchana gocharam. So Prabhupada, in the word for word, has called akinchana gocharam one who is approached easily by the materially exhausted man. So we have two very common examples. One is Yudhisthira, another is Maharaj Ambarish, whose opulence were extreme. One has said his opulence rivaled the heavenly planets, the other surpassed the opulence of the heavenly planets while here on earth because of the degree of piety, because with piety comes the fruits of piety, opulence. So both were enormously opulent, but not interested at all in the enjoyment of those opulences. Rather, they had only one interest, the interest of serving Krishna. That was Maharaj Ambarish, that was Maharaj Yudhisthira, and frankly, it's the position of Kunti. She had opulence, but she's pointing to the fact that those that have opulence, there's a tendency to try to be the enjoyer of those opulences. Just like at Bayahari's home on Thursday evening, the gentleman that was asking the question, the tendency to hanker for enjoying things, being the enjoyer, being attached to the notion of being the enjoyer of things that I earn through my livelihood, my house, my car, my bank balance, my stuff. And so I want a better one or two of them or something. Or more than two. One of the recent plane rides from somewhere to somewhere, I don't remember where it was. I think it was New York to Chicago. Southwest Airlines, where people don't have an assigned seat. So I like sitting on the aisle seat. So somebody sat in the window seat and then the plane filled up. So there was two people that didn't know each other sitting side by side next to me. And from the time they started their chit-chat to the time they got off the plane, they were just comparing how many different devices they had. What this one does and what that one does, and there's a new one on the market. Oh, I should get that one too. And, you know, for 2.5 hours just on, you know, technology gizmos. And, you know, this one's coming out with a new product, and that one's got an even better one, and this one's more slim, and this one has these features. And for 2.5 hours. And another one, just recently, it was just in Minnesota going to Denver, and somehow the flight was through Detroit. So it was spring break. So Michigan State was on spring break, and the person on the aisle seat was a graduate student, very clearly, you know, good features, well-educated, with his Michigan State cap on. And he sat down and started playing one of those games on his little device. You know, I don't even know. It's with balls that come and go and different colors and numbers. I don't know what the whole thing is. And the whole, you know, 2.5 hours without stop, because now you can, in plane mode, you can use those devices, even on takeoff. So he didn't, like, even on takeoff and landing, and I don't even know if he got his luggage. He's maybe still sitting there playing the game. And this is, an intelligent graduate student making his brain dull. Maybe he just, like, was exhausted from his exams and needed a brain number or something. I don't know. But it's so... that's not happiness. It's dullness. Some of you have probably attended the Festival of Inspiration. Anyone not attended the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan? Okay. Well, one of the keynote speakers annually is Peter Burwash, and almost every time I've attended, he gets into this thing where how media makes the brain dull. He, you know, there are tests, like studies that show somebody's watching television or a monitor on their screen. Here's a sailboat. The wind is blowing, the sails are full, and the scene is, and the brain activity is zero. And then somebody's reading the same description from a book. The sailboat is sailing across the sea, and the sunlight is sparkling on the wave, and the waves are lapping, and the sound of the waves, and the side of the hull of the ship, and the, you know, this and that. And the brain activity is, like, you know, very active. Those kinds of things make you really dull. So the last time a student asked me, you know, how do I have trouble concentrating in my studies. I asked them, how much do you play those little games? Well, I used to play a lot, and they're doing it less now. I'm trying to do it less now. It just makes you dull. Not just temporary dull, it's like long-term dull. It's really sad because it's all over the place. And then they make new ones and spiffier ones and violent ones and all kinds of ones. They keep, you know, keep people to buy the new one and do the new, you know, this guy kicking that guy, and I don't know what the hell what they do. So being attached, Kunti is saying, being attached to worldly existence is called the Sanskrit term. In the beginning part of the first canto, is pravritti, increasing material enjoyment. The purpose of persons taking up religious activity for the purpose of increasing their piety, for the purpose of increasing their material prosperity, for the purpose of increasing material enjoyment. Her point is, it makes one unable to feelingly call upon the personality of Godhead. How unfortunate. So she's portraying herself as such an unfortunate person because I've taken this high birth, and not only that, I have a high birth both by being the wife of Pandu and having these illustrious sons, the Pandavas, but also my other family, the Yadu dynasty family, and I'm torn emotionally between the two families. So she's praying to Krishna to help her become unattached to the material side of life and attached to the spiritual dimension of life. Let me be attached to my sons and to my father's family on the spiritual platform alone. Please remove the material side. Please bring me to this position of akinchana. Akinchana gochara in the first verse and akinchana vitaya is translated in the second verse. Materially, the property of the materially impoverished and vitaya, my obeisances go unto you who is the property of those that have no material property. And even you can have property, but if you understand it's Krishna's property, then you don't have property. It's Krishna's property. Those that are fully dedicated unto Krishna are akinchana. And he's akinchana Krishna, or akinchana Vitaya, or akinchana Gochara. And the reason I wanted to speak on these two verses is because when Ananda Vrindavan wanted me to select a topic for tomorrow's program at the Potomac Temple, she wanted it to be on something in relation to Ram, because it's like, it's Ram time. Rabindra had spoken on two topics, and I was given those two topics, and so, you know, pick another one, please. So I thought I'd also follow that trend. And there's a very nice scene from Ram's Leela where the term akinchana also is directly uttered. And it's in relation to Vibhishan, when, you know, he probably doesn't know who is Vibhishan. Do you know who is Vibhishan? Vibhishan. Do you know who is Ravana? Huh? Who is Ravana? He's a bad guy, right? Ravana. You're not sure. You do, you just got struck fear in your heart when I asked you. Do you know who is Ravana? Yes. Tell me, who is Ravana? Yeah. And his kingdom was? And one of, he had several brothers. You know the names of some of those brothers? Yeah. And Kar. Yeah. Krishna, Ram killed him in the forest. So, and then Suparnaka came and, you know, you cut off my nose and my ears, go get revenge. And Kars, you know, and Ram killed him, and along with all of his generals, Trishiras. And so, Vibhishan is one of the brothers of Ramachandra. And Vibhishan, as well as the maternal, or his wife's father, Mandodari's father, tried to counsel Ravan. This is sinful, and there's going to be reaction for your sinful activity of stealing, kidnapping Sita, and you should just stop it and return Sita back to Ram and everything will be okay. But he couldn't do that. He couldn't take good counsel. So separately, Vibhishan came after Hanuman had come and devastated the whole city and, you know, victory to Ram, and, you know, you're going to get smashed. Ram is going to come with warriors, thousands that are as powerful as me, and you're all finished. Unless you give back Sita. No, he wouldn't do it. He was really stubborn and lusty and stupid. So Vibhishan advised him, and Ram couldn't hear it. Excuse me, Ravana couldn't hear it. So Vibhishan, it's like Vidura, very similar scene. I've given my counsel, you can't hear it. So I can't stay here and be party to this sinful activity and the reaction to the sinful activity. So he defected. It's described, he had, like Hanuman and some of the other personalities on the Ravana's side, they had mystic powers. And one of those mystic powers is he rose in the air right in the midst of the assembly along with four of his ministers. And they, without an airplane or anything, they just transported themselves to Ravana's camp, 80 miles away on the other side of the ocean, from Lanka back to the southern part of India. And as they were approaching, the heads of the army, Ram and Lakshman and Sugriva and Hanuman and other ministers, saw them, these five figures approaching in the sky. And Sugriva has this nervous kind of tendency. Who's that? Just like when he saw Ram and Lakshman approaching in Rishimukh Mountain. Who's that? Maybe they're this and maybe they're that. Maybe it's Bali and sending a messenger. Maybe he's a disguise. Maybe, you know, I don't trust it. So he had that same spirit towards Vibhishan and his party. He's been in Ravan's association. How can he be of good character? Anyone that would be in his association has to have imbibed some of his awful qualities, and I don't trust him. He's coming without arms, but maybe he wants to surrender, but who knows what the plan is. Better watch it. So, Ram, in an exemplary way, in case you have to make a decision, think of this procedure that Ram followed. He consulted his ministers. And different ones said different things. And then he consulted Hanuman. And Hanuman said, they were all suspicious in different degrees, not all as, you know, as nervous about things as Sugriva was. We should watch him very carefully. And many of them said, and Hanuman said, a minister must understand the mind of another person by their speech and by their countenance. And by seeing that the face, which is the index of the mind of Vibhishan, I see no malice in him. And hearing his speech, not only it's very refined, my senses, it's very genuine. He simply wants to take shelter of you. And he may have some motivation. He may wish to become king, but he understands that Ravana is sinful. He's spoken in this way, and because of his sinful position, he's going to be destroyed by you, and he wants to be with you, helping him destroy his own brother, because he's sinful, and this is righteousness. So, even he has some motivation, you should accept him unreservedly. And then Ram spoke a line that we often hear when you hear about Ram's the statements from Ramayana. This is where it comes. He said, I declare it boldly for everyone to hear, and from this time forward, anyone who even once with sincerity takes full shelter of me, I promise that I will give my protection. So Ram accepted him. And commentators on this particular situation indicate that the four ministers represent some aspects of surrender. One of them is akinchana. That's the connection of these two. Kunti's prayers and Vibhishan surrender. The indication is that two of the qualities of surrender, the surrendering person, and two of the characteristics of the person unto whom one is to surrender, are indicated by these four ministers. And the first of the qualities is akinchanatvam. Akinchanatvam. Tvam means like something-somethingness, the quality of something. Akinchanatvam. So, akinchanatvam means somebody who possesses no other shelter, no worldly shelter. Where he left was opulence like the heavenly kingdom, or surpassing the heavenly kingdom. Ravana was super opulent. The city was made of gold. Of course, there must have been some wood also, because Hanuman burned it. What was left was the gold part. Akinchanatvam. It's a quality necessary, as Kunti is indicating, to surrender. And then another quality is ananya gatitvam. Gati means goal, and ananya means no other. Having the quality of no other shelter but. They have no material shelters, and they have only one shelter. And that was the position of Vibhishan. he actually was an elevated personality. He just, you know, had a really nasty brother. And he gave appropriate advice, fearlessly spoke the truth, like Vidura spoke the truth to Dhritarashtra, who didn't want to hear it, his elder brother. He wasn't intimidated by Dhritarashtra or Duryodhana or any other of the wicked people. He just spoke the truth. Vibhishan spoke the truth, and Ravan didn't want to hear it, so he left him. His real shelter was truth. His real shelter was Ram. So akinchanatvam and ananya gatitvam, those are two qualities on the side of someone who is surrendering. And then the acharyas indicate that there's two qualities that should be there on the side of one who's the worthy object of shelter. And these are two very nice qualities. One is saralata. Saralata literally means simplicity. And in that simplicity, Ram stated, I don't consider the background of this person. I don't consider what their motive is. I don't consider their education, etc., etc. I mean, and this is a wonderful quality of Ram. He accepted Sugriva, he accepted Hanuman, he accepted, depending on which version of Ramayana you read, the squirrel, kicking the little pieces into the ocean to help make the bridge. And Jatayu, and, you know, regardless, and Vibhishan, who is, you know, from a family of demons, he accepted him as his devotee. Why? In each case, it's just according to their sincere submission, they wished to serve according to their ability, and they did, and Ram accepted. Just as Krishna does also. Patram pushpam palam toyam yomi bhaktya prayachati. Krishna accepts offerings based on the love and devotion with which it is offered, not on the basis of birth, opulence, good education, or beauty. Only if you're beautiful will I accept your offerings. That's not Krishna, it's not Ram. Shabari, a forest resident, an insignificant personality by worldly standards. But Ram was so happy, and she was so devoted. She went back to Godhead. What to speak of, Ram accepted her service. So, saralata, this quality of the person who is receiving surrender, they're not considering material qualification, disqualification. It's the sincerity of the submission with which one is approaching. And then the fourth, specifically in the case of Ram, he had the power to give protection to Vibhishan and those who surrendered unto him. Now, he's the personality of Godhead, but others who are representatives of the personality of Godhead, Krishna can empower them too. At least in terms of uplifting one's spiritual well-being. Not necessarily if Ravana comes to attack, then they'll dismiss Ravana with their fiery arrow or something like that. But protect one's spiritual well-being by spiritual strength and good instruction and proper guidance in one's activities. So back to Queen Kunti's teaching. It's a characteristic of one who wishes to take Krishna's shelter that they look at whatever are those things, the gifts that Krishna has given that make one's life perhaps comfortable or opulent or whatever, and see them as facility for serving Krishna only, and otherwise with like these great souls, a degree of detachment. What is the use, Kunti was praying, what is the use of a kingdom if you go? You come because we were without the kingdom, and it was a calamitous situation. Now the calamity is over and you're leaving. Better we have calamity. What's the next calamity? Because then we have your association. That's the valuable thing for a devotee. So you don't have to have calamity to have Krishna's association. You have to have a desire for Krishna's association, to have Krishna's association. And for that, there has to be this quality of akinshana, of not finding shelter in material things. Now, conditioning tells us, well, we have to have basics, and certainly we have to have basics, and Krishna will supply them. This is the mood, at least, of a surrendered soul. We make endeavors, because we're not lazy. We make endeavors to serve Krishna in a proper way. And as we're making endeavors to serve Krishna in a proper way, he will see that whatever we require, we have. So our attention goes to serving Krishna, not to acquiring things. There's not a secular dimension to Krishna consciousness. Secular means this is what I do for God, and this is what I do for worldly things. The worldly things are not worldly, they're in service to Krishna only. And other than that, I don't make an endeavor. I don't have an interest. My interest is Krishna's shelter. Ananya gatitvam, no other shelter. And akinshana tvam. That's the lesson for today from Bhagavatam and Ramayana. Okay. So you learned about some personalities today. Yeah? Vibhishan is younger, one of the younger brothers of Ravana. And Ravana is a bad guy. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yes? If we're attached to them. In the very beginning of that, the ninth canto description of Maharaj Ambarish, it describes in detail his opulences and then says that he had no more interest in those things than he did a pebble in the street. They were there in his treasury at his disposal, and he utilized them in ruling his kingdom, but he wasn't attached to them at all. It wasn't just interesting talk. He demonstrated it by, when his life was threatened, he just took shelter of the Supreme Lord. Yeah. He's a noisy guy. Get out. Close the door. Anything else? Yes?
Material shelters, one of the things is the tendency to depend on one's own ability.
Yeah.
And as we initially take up even devotional service, there is that, okay, I can.
Sure.
But does it just by practice of the devotional service that tendency goes away and we take real proper shelter of Krishna?
Do you remember the discussion this morning about the horse pulling the cart? There's the answer to your question. It's not automatically as in a vending machine. It's through some endeavor on the strength of pursuing pleasing Krishna. Yes. Can you turn the volume up a little? I was speaking about Vibhishana. He's mixed.
But he did not have those demonic qualities.
Correct.
So, I think we have a lesson in that.
Yes.
So how did he have, he had these good qualities even in the midst of being in the demons?
There was some shelter in, I mentioned, he was a proponent of truth. And not only truth in the performance of duty sense, but in the absolute sense, both. Like in the performance of duty, an example of that is when Hanuman was after, you know, just bringing devastation to the city of Lanka, and he was captured with those ropes, then brought before Ravana. Boldly, he insulted Ravana. So much so that Ravana said, kill him. And Vibhishana said, this isn't according to the codes of Kshatriya. You cannot kill a messenger from the opposing army or opposing force. You can punish him in a proper manner, but you can't kill him. It's forbidden. It's just, that's a code of conduct, you know, that kind of Dharma. And Ravana was moved by that. He didn't have him, tried to have him killed. But then there's the higher sense. Now, you know, he wanted to take shelter of Ram. Not just, you know, because he's going to win and Ravana's going to lose and I want to be on the winning side, because it was taking shelter of Ram. So, some way, if the next question is where did he get it? Somewhere we can know for sure. I don't know what that somewhere is. It may be there in our mind that I'm not aware of, or maybe some acharya has commented on it. I don't know the answer. But some association, because bhakti comes from one who's carrying bhakti. So he had that. Kumbhakarna to a lesser degree. But Kumbhakarna also told him, this is sinful. You're going to be destroyed. Everyone's going to be destroyed. But he placed, I'm your brother, and so I'll act as your brother, even though it's the wrong thing to do. So that's like a Dharma principle. You're the brother, you're the elder brother, I should follow the elder brother, even if it's sinful. That's a wrong calculation. But Vinisha didn't make that wrong calculation. He made the right calculation. So somewhere he had some association of a bhakta, somewhere along the road.
His father was a devotee.
Huh?
His father was a
brahmana. Was he also a devotee?
The son of Bhavasya was a great sage.
Okay. So there we go. There we go. Thank you. It depends on the circumstance, doesn't it? Time, place, and circumstance. This is, you know, this is a continuation of the question you asked this morning. How do I know? I'm inexperienced. Time, place, circumstance person, I don't really know. So then, inquire from one who knows. Maybe even circumstance by circumstance, be under the guidance of someone who can indicate to you what is to be done and how it is to be done. Or give you some options that are, this is within the range of something that is a way that it can be done. And guide you. and these are the principles involved. We need teachers. Students need teachers. Teachers don't need students. Students need teachers. Yes.
Thank you very much for the very nice class. Two points are rather, I want to get some elaboration on this Akintintam and Ananya Gati. On the flow of things, when we are doing things in our lives, basically, and as you mentioned, like when there are four things, you have opulence, you have this and that.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for a person to feel akinchintam. Or maybe, I mean, say you have experience that may give you it for a certain time or certain moment that, okay, you are insignificant, really insignificant. But in general, how to feel, how to incorporate that feeling?
The answer is really simple. Mm-hmm. Application is another thing. Increase bhakti. It's like a commercial. Stronger than dirt. Boom. it can rid everything. And so attention goes to not ridding the unwanted. Attention goes to bhakti. It's the same as the discussion this morning about the horse and the cart. Focus on taking shelter of Krishna in devotion and our chanting is primary means for that. And all of the other things that we do is to enhance that and carry that over into your life. Like, you know, how you interact in the home and how you interact in the workplace and your study habits and, you know, everything is, if it's focused, that's vyavasayatmika buddhi. Akeha kuranandana. So, like that, cultivate. Ananyas chintayanto. Bhagavad Gita is filled with verses that explain. Focus in that way upon the bhakti principle. Nurture bhakti. And the primary nurturing is the hearing and chanting activity. And how you do that, the qualitative way, not, you know, quantitative, but the particularly qualitative way that you do that. And in the association with suitable persons that can help increase. So it's, when bhakti is strong, the other follows. And bhakti is weak and it's a struggle. In the immature stage, it's the hills and the valleys or the sine curve. Unsteadiness. Sometimes stronger, sometimes weaker. So continue to nurture the bhakti in your life, the bhakti element and how you do everything. Starting right in the home and starting in your bead bag, you know, starting in your heart. Okay. Something more?
I was just wondering about the feeling of insignificance. Is it really?
It's natural.
It's natural.
If one has a picture of reality, that also helps.
Actually, this morning I was probably reading Emerson, and he says that at the end, all our life we do so many different things, and at the end of the life we are just nothing but dirt. So something like that he was mentioning, and it is exactly that.
Well, that's the temporality of things, but the tendency to think that, you know, us as significant, it's false ego. We need a spiritual conception. In spiritual conception, what are we or who are we? Mami vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. And even from a material perspective, we're insignificant. You've probably heard the story. Do you want me to recite it again? Of Prabhupada explaining. So it happened once on the East Coast and the West Coast. Brahmananda in New York and Karantar on the West Coast. Same Prabhupada. I'm getting so much praise and honor and service and position, and how do I maintain humility in the midst of all of this? You heard the story?
No.
Okay. They're walking on Mott Street. Prabhupada is a morning walk with three other devotees. And Brahmananda, the temple president, big, powerful, in charge of so many things, and, you know, very important personality in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, asking Prabhupada, how do I maintain humility? So many. And Prabhupada put his cane down. Sesrup Marsh was there, so he described exactly what happened. And he said, in the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's the largest of all the Vaikuntha planets named Goloka Vrindavan. And other than Goloka Vrindavan, which is larger than all of the other Vaikuntha planets, there's innumerable Vaikuntha planets in that vastness of the spiritual sky. And just kept going down. And then in some corner of the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a cloud of the material energy called Mahatattva. Within that Mahatattva, a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna lies down, and from his body come innumerable universes. And of all those innumerable universes, one of them is the smallest of them all. In that smallest of them all universe, there's so many planets you cannot count them all. And amongst all those planets, there's one called planet Earth. And then could keep going down and down. And of this planet Earth, there's seven seas and seven continents, and one of them is called North America. And in North America, there's one place called the United States. And in the United States, there's 50 states. One of them is called New York State. In New York State, there's one city called New York City. And this New York City, there's so many millions of people in so many streets. And out of so many streets, one, there's a little place called Mott Street. And one little living entity is asking me, how can I think of myself as being very humble? This reality. And then later, or I guess it was later, spoke the same message to the temple president in Los Angeles. But it was for the benefit of all the devotees. So we're literally insignificant. Not figuratively, literally insignificant in the bigger picture of things. Reality is we're really insignificant. When we're thinking of ourselves otherwise, significant. Inflated sense of our importance. But that's taken care of automatically as bhakti awakens. It's naturally awakened, the sense of humility. And further and further and further and further and further degrees of natural humility, because it's natural for the soul. It's the shelter-taking position, as opposed to the shelter of material opulences, which we may have or may not have. And one is not in a position of happiness and success, and the other's position of failure and unhappiness. The spiritual perspective, the spiritual conception of life is, I'm none of these things anyways. If something is there, I can use it in Krishna service. If it's not there, I'll serve Krishna some other way, chant and be happy. Yeah? Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai.